Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department that makes it one-stop vehicle shopping. With the ability to take care of all the routine stuff, oil changes, inspections, and, of course, the difficult stuff that you worry about all the time. All the diagnostics. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. Let's get to our play-by-play call of the day.
Matt Olson, who hit a home run behind Darnold in the first inning. Swing and a shot. Hammered toward right center field. Did it stay up? Yes! Matt Olson has a two-homer game. And the Braves are back in front. A fist pump for Olson, Jeff, as he got to first base. He plays so stoically, but all of a sudden, the excitement's starting to brew for Matt.
Chip Carey with the call on the Braves TV network. Matt's a big fan.
What, of the Braves or of Chip?
Both.
I'm not a big fan of the Braves, actually.
Oh, you're a front runner. Come on.
Now, the Braves have always annoyed me.
Why do they annoy you? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of things that annoy you.
I just never liked the franchise. I never liked their fans either. They're either extremely obnoxious or they're kind of like the Miami Heat fans, or they just don't show up and don't care.
They're outdrawing your team. All right, we'll come. Actually, the Braves and the Yankees are pretty close in terms of attendance. All right. I just felt it was important that you got that off your chest.
Well, thank you, as always.
It's sad we have to go that direction. All right. Okay. Let's bring in John Sauber, Center Daily Times. John, great to have you with us. Welcome back.
Yeah, happy to be on, and thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right. I want to start with Live for Life. That's coming up tomorrow. When you've gone to that in the past, what are you looking for as a reporter? I know the fans are looking for certain things, but what are you looking for?
Yeah, it's a combination of things, right? It's kind of our first chance to see sort of who has matured physically, right, at this point. You can really get a chance to see some offensive linemen that have maybe bulked up or managed to sort of change their body and what it looks like. And you're usually getting that chance for the first time in a while to see, you know, who is taking that step physically and that sort of maturity that comes with that. And the other thing is, you know, we're talking to some guys, talking to Parker Washington, scheduled to talk to Parker Washington, Landon Tangwall, other guys. So you're looking to gauge where guys are at, get the sort of, I hate to say it like this, but sort of like the vibe for the season, where the team feels, where they're at mentally, because it can be tough coming off the season like last season. And you kind of want to see how things have shifted heading into this year and sort of if the page has been turned mentally, or if there's a sort of using that as motivation, using last year's motivation aspect to it.
Do you feel this team has a chance to turn that page?
I think so. I think it should be better than 7-6, right? I think from that standpoint, they can turn the page. But I also think in some sense, you want to harbor it a little bit and think about, you know, what last year felt like for the guys that sort of really clung to that and didn't like that feeling, and, you know, as motivation to get better and to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, everyone's motivated in different ways. I think that, you know, the sort of downturn the team took last season can be a motivator this year for guys. But yeah, I think they can turn the page. I think they should be better than they were last year. The record should indicate that anyways. But at the end of the day, this is a tough schedule. You know, this is going to be a grind, and it's going to be a grind early. So the page does have to be turned here quickly. You can use it as motivation in the off season, but once you get to West Lafayette on that Thursday in September, you have to be ready to go because things are starting fast for Penn State this year.
It is an interesting mix on this team where they have, I believe, 9 seniors or redshirt seniors total among the 85 scholarship players, just 9. But it's not an inexperienced team either. How do you view that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because eligibility is tough now, right? Like, it's tough to even tell what year certain guys are just because the COVID year is, you know, backed everyone up a little bit, and there are guys that we would never would thought be there for another year that are, you know, Sean Clifford being one of those guys, right? Like, he's back for his 6th year because of the COVID year. But I do think this is a veteran team at certain spots, right? Quarterback being the most obvious one, the offensive line being another, you know, at center and at right tackle. Of course, getting guys like Hunter Norzad and Mitchell Tinsley offensively will help with that sort of veteran leadership, even if those guys haven't been at Penn State their entire careers, and this is their first year there. But I do think it is a veteran team offensively at the very top, but there is reason to believe in the upside of the youth. And like you said, having those limited number of redshirt seniors allows you to look at guys who should be back for another year next year, or could be back for another year next year, I should say. Someone like Ulu Fashanu, who should come in and contribute pretty quickly at left tackle after being on campus for a few years and backing up Rasheed Walker. And obviously he plays in the outback bowl and looks really good doing it. Mm-hmm. He's someone that could be, you know, he's relatively young, but, you know, there's a chance for a massive step forward. So there are these young guys who are kind of ready to take that step that, while they don't have the top-end veteran leadership at every position, they have a good mix of guys who've been at Penn State a while, right? Like, they've been there 2 or 3 or 4 years that maybe aren't seniors yet because they've redshirted because of the COVID year, but have experience. So it may not be an old team, but I do think it is an experienced team more than you would usually look at given the sort of the age and the class of guys.
John, it'll be 1 year on Friday of name, image, and likeness. Now, we always hear about the mega deals or the transfer deals, but the vast majority of them are what we would think they would be. How do you think it's working right now?
I think it's been a mixed bag. I think especially in Pennsylvania, I think, you know, the actual legislation getting out in front of it helped, but at some point it can be restrictive when you look at other states and how it's, I don't want to call it a free-for-all, but there's more leeway in getting these deals and what guys can do with these deals. But I think, you know, like anything that is an abrupt change, it takes a while. I think Penn State has been, in some sense, a little bit behind, but it seems like they've been catching up of late. Like you mentioned the mega deals we've seen with guys like Jaden Rashada at Miami and everything like that, you know, the numbers can get big for these guys at the top of the roster. And Ryan Day from Ohio State said that he needs at least $13 million just to maintain his roster. And James Franklin said the number's bigger than what's been bandied about. And, of course, that's the number that's been bandied about. So it's going to take some time, I think, for people to adjust to that reality of it. And it's kind of to be expected that it took Penn State a little bit to catch up. And I still think they're catching up in some standpoint with that. But I think generally it's gone well, right? The kids who have been able to make money have taken advantage of it, and there are kids that are even lower on rosters that are able to make some money. It may not be these mega deals, but it's, you know, like you said, it's what you've expected. There are guys getting smaller deals that are helping them out, that helps their families out, and I think at the end of the day, that's for the better.
And then against that backdrop, you have a day like tomorrow coming up where the players are going to spend their time giving back. How important is it, John, that we never forget that the vast majority of you guys feel this way and it's not about mega deals?
Yeah, I think it is important, you know, that you know, even looking at something like what Sean Clifford's doing with Limitless, to it's obviously a very different kind of giving back, but he's trying to help the sort of next generation of player be in a position to do this. And frankly, it's easier for guys to, you know, give back financially when they have more of a financial windfall themselves. And tomorrow is a different standpoint, right? It's not the financial, their own financial giving back. It's a, you know, they're putting the effort in to raise money, you know, with Lift for Life and everything. But I think it, you know, giving guys more opportunities to give back by them having more in the first place is a good thing. You know, it can further benefit the community when someone like Sean Clifford is getting involved at that level and helping guys, you know, make more money that they're able to give back to the things that they want to give back to.
All right. The other part, of course, is the transfer portal. This is something, John, because you cover college basketball as well. College basketball has been like this for a long time, where I've always referred to April as the waiver wire. I've said that for years. What is that? You know, what is that doing for the game? And do you think that, you know, college basketball has never really settled down? I can't picture college football settling down either. Do you?
No, I think this is sort of the new reality of it, and I think it is. It's definitely added some excitement to the off season. I think, right, from whether you're covering the team or you're a fan of a team, there are more avenues to improve your roster when you look at it that way. You know, a team that has a hole like Penn State had at wide receiver, losing Jahan Dotson, they can go out and get Mitchell Tinsley, and you know, that frankly wouldn't have been possible beforehand. You know, I believe he graduated, so with him specifically he might have been able to, but it wouldn't have been as easy, you know, especially before, you know, the graduate transfer stipulation that was added before the portal became in vogue, with you know, not having to sit out as long as your first transfer. So I think it's generally a good thing. You know, I as someone who transferred colleges, right, and I wasn't a student athlete, like, I think kids should be able to go where they want to go to school. Motivations aside, I think you're allowed to be motivated by what you want to be motivated by. But I think it's added some excitement to it. Like you said, college basketball has been this way forever. I think calling it the waiver wire is an excellent way to put it. We've been seeing this for a very long time. It's increased that waiver wire in college basketball for sure. We're seeing even more movement now. But with college football, I think we're going to continue to see this, you know, this be a major part of the offseason. And coaching staffs will have to adapt. They'll have to sort of, as James Franklin put it, understand their roster, right, and keep track of it, know where their guys are at, know what they're feeling. And, you know, I think, again, that's only going to be a good thing in the long run as guys have more options and are able to sort of have more control of their own destiny and what they want to do with their college life.
You're being humble, John. When you transferred, you were highly sought after.
I appreciate it.
Okay. So I'll get to basketball now. Penn State's going to do a reseat. You're going to take the student section, you're going to flip it behind the benches. With TV, with cameras pointed toward benches, and, of course, the students back there, what can that do for perception of atmosphere in the building?
I think that is enormous. Right. I think this is, you know, we don't know who initiated these conversations or anything, but I think doing this is sort of long overdue, quite frankly, as someone who used to go to basketball games as a student. I remember, you know, wondering why the students weren't behind the benches. That seems like the logical place to put them, having them, like you said, on TV in full view. Because it is a pretty good student section. It's filled for most games. And
yes,
I think Penn State basketball fans and Penn State basketball fans that are students especially get a bad rap for, you know, they don't show up or whatever. But that student section is generally pretty full. And putting that on camera is only going to help. It's only going to help with the atmosphere. It also injects some excitement, right, for students to be encouraged even more to go out now, because, you know, it's fun to sit behind the bench. It's fun to have that view of things. And I think it is going to make a big difference from an atmosphere standpoint. It'll engage the bench itself more. There'll be a more active you know, crowd behind the bench and getting those guys involved more and cheering them on and, you know, and just being involved in the game more. And I think that's a good thing, because you know, the arena hasn't always been the best for basketball, but I think there are ways to get sort of the number of people in there to optimize it and have them laid out in a way that's optimized, and I think this is an important first step to that.
Yeah, I've talked about this for 20 years, John. You know, I've been around for a long time. But I've talked about it for 20 years, that I, you know, because I know which way TV wants to shoot it. And anybody who's having their seat moved and is upset about it, your arguments are valid. So I do not want to discount anybody's feeling about that at all. Your arguments are valid. That's been your seat. I understand that. But long term for the program, this is my opinion, John. You can disagree or agree. But long term for the perception of the program, this is the best move to make.
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you said, being upset that your seat is moved is valid. Like, if you really enjoyed sitting behind the bench. But I think at the end of the day, it is. If you're buying those tickets, you're invested in the program, right? You want to see the program succeed, and this will help the program succeed in ways that we probably haven't seen, you know, a potential sustainable success. And it may seem like a small thing, but those small things add up. And so I think if, like you said, it's perfectly reasonable to be upset if your seat is being moved, but I think if you really are invested in that way, then you'll be able to see sort of the forest for the trees, that this is what's best for the program in the long run. And if getting those tickets is an investment in the program in some sense anyway. So I think at the end of the day, it will be beneficial for all parties.
What everybody knows right now is the Charleston tournament, which is a really good field, at Clemson and Butler here. So at least that's the part that people do know to this point. What can that non-conference schedule tell us about what kind of team they have going into the Big Ten? Will they be challenged enough?
Yeah, I think so. Butler is, I think that might be more exciting for people like me, right? The storylines of Micah playing against or coaching against the school that he spent time at under Brad Stevens, but
right.
That's exciting to me. But I think Butler should be better this year. Thad Matta being the head coach now should give them a little bit of a boost. Like you said, Charleston is going to be a strong field and is going to give us more data points, but I don't know if it will tell us as much as we'd want to know about the team heading into Big Ten play, but I think it will tell us enough to sort of see where they need to improve, right? Like that early part of the schedule is a good time to find out what the team is and how it can improve and kind of what it needs to lean into and become sort of its MO, right? Last year, we saw that they needed to slow the pace down and they needed to be a half-court offense and they needed to grind you out defensively. And we learned that based on them sort of – there were a couple of up-tempo games early on that didn't go well, right? And you found out pretty quickly that they needed to slow the pace down to be successful. So I think it may not tell us how good they are, but it may tell us what they are. And I think that can be just as valuable, you know, in determining sort of what they can be next year.
Yeah, Eric Hunter's going to transfer from Purdue to Butler. Manny Bates has transferred from NC State to Butler. Clemson's got a couple of kids that are, you know, Clemson's, you know, they've actually had a couple of kids transfer out that they wanted to keep. So that'll be interesting. They've never played at Little John either, because the one time they played down there, Little John was being renovated and they had to play in Anderson, South Carolina. So,
yep.
You know, I was a witness. I've been a witness to a lot, John. Always a pleasure, John. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. See you tomorrow.
John Sovers, Center Daily Times. The Complaint Half Hour, starring AM. You know who AM is?
Something Matt?
Angry Matt. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Lift for Life is tomorrow, 5 to 6:30. Lash Football Fields. Players have been planning this series of meetings over the past year. Gets back for the first time really in 3 years to see it happen. It's great. And it'll benefit uplifting athletes and rare diseases are the ones that will benefit from this research on rare diseases, will be benefited by this. Final half hour, what does Matt think is stupid? No?
It's minor, but I do have something.
Oh, jeez.
It's minor, though.
Brutal. Just brutal. You need to wake up every day feeling positive about life.
No, usually I do.
What, and then all of a sudden you go online?
Basically.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory. That also brings with it great warranties. Pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. And not only that, but great service department. Routine oil changes, inspections, diagnostics. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we now bring in Matt Cotrillo with another Angry Matt moment.
Like I said, this is just minor, but Miles Sanders, our boy, said on CBS Sports the other day that we all feel like we're an all-star team, talking about the Eagles adding A.J. Brown, having Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, blah, blah, blah. He said, we feel like we're all on an all-star team, so we feel great. We feel unstoppable, I'm not going to lie. The vibes are great, always have been. Nick Sirianni is doing a great job just keeping the vibes right, the chemistry good. We compete a lot in practice, but we've got to see. It's got to come down to camp, taking it day by day, putting everything together. Now, that last part would have been, like, that second half, I would have no problem with. But the product I have a problem with is saying you're an all-star team, feel unstoppable. Just bad things happen when you say things like that, a.k.a. the Dream Team thing with Vince Young a couple years ago, and there's other ones out there. Just leave those big quotes out and just stick to something like the second half. I think you can get across that, yeah, you're confident, but you can be quiet about it still. Not have, like, these big headlines like we feel like we're an all-star team. So what's minor beef, but it's just, come on, man. Like, be careful what you say.
So he's made you afraid?
I don't want to say afraid, per se, but, you know, I'm a believer in the bulletin board material sometimes.
They have some talent.
They do. And like I said, I looked at the schedule. They should be an 11-win team this year. But that doesn't mean you have to fully acknowledge that with saying something like you feel like you're on an all-star team. Just have a quiet, easygoing confidence. Keep that all in-house and make it, and just let it show on game day. Let it show on the field.
So you're afraid. You feel like everything has gone down the drain because of words, not actions.
Like I said, afraid I think is a little too far, but you don't have to say it. You don't have to say something like that.
It's all about actions. It's not about words. Again, we spend so much time in a sport, for example, that only plays 63 days out of the year, including the playoffs, which means the other 302, 303 for those of you who enjoy leap year. There's a lot of time for a lot of words, but it's all about action. You have to go out and you have to be able to make it pay off. His statements will have nothing to do with that. Nothing. That's what I always love. That motivated us, what he said. What motivated you? I always crack up about that stuff. You got motivated by a statement? Now, could it possibly make you practice harder, pay more attention in practice leading up to the game? Sure. That can happen. But once you get smacked in the mouth, you better be able to react to it. I've always been a big believer in that. To me, words mean nothing. They're words. Do you think I ever sit there and go, oh, I can't believe he said that? Like, I don't care.
Yes, this is not up your alley, I know.
I'm saying, I don't think it's irrelevant. Do you think somebody's going to sit there and say, do you remember Miles Sanders said they were an all-star team back in the day? Hey, they're just words. It's all they are, words. You kind of get a... I just think it's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Words during the course of the week don't mean anything. It's all about when you play. Go out, do you hit shots? Go out, do you complete passes? Do you win your matchup? It's what it comes down to. It's about what happens on the field of play. Words don't mean anything at that point. You can yap and talk all you want. Does it bring more interest? Sure. Texas A&M is going to play Alabama on October 8th. We all know about Jimbo and Nick Saban and the dust-up last month or whatever the heck it was. So there's going to be more interest because of the words that were spoken. But there's a couple parts. Number one, neither one plays. And if they played, it would be less interesting because neither one is athletic enough to play anymore.
I think Nick Saban.
But at the same time, it's going to be who executes better. Who gets turnovers. I may be too simple in how I view things, but to me, that's what it comes down to. It'll be more interesting because of what was said in May. I think it was back in May this happened. What was said in May will bring more interest to the game. But when it comes down to the winning and the losing of the game, it'll come down to talent and execution. Not words. But the suit and I have talked about this many times. He's a big believer in the pregame storyline. You know, so the intro to the game to then hype the game is really important. So he'll write openings and music and the whole thing. And it's really well done. Really well done. Right? You'd agree with that, right? It's really well done.
Definitely.
I open the game, I ad-lib, and whatever, we go. It's like, I'm not being lazy, but certain things speak for itself. Penn State's playing Ohio State. What do you want me to do? A five-minute intro? Like, oh, you won't believe this. It's Penn State playing Michigan. Here we go. You tell everybody what the stakes are. Then you go from there. After that, it becomes, who's the better team? Who executes better? That's what it comes down to every game. So how often, you've heard me talk about teams being in close games. So I've used the Mike Krzyzewski example many times. Mike Krzyzewski's record in close games is actually about the same. You know, games decided by 5 points or less. It's about the same as everybody else's in terms of winning percentage. Right? The difference is the really good teams aren't in close games. Why? They have more talent and they execute better. It drives you nuts, I think, that way. You can admit it. You hate, I think, that way.
No, it's your way of thinking. You and I just approach it a little differently, that's all.
But saying something means zero, nothing. It's bulletin board material. What do you think about? Oh, that's it. I'm going to play harder because of what he said. How about like you play harder because if you don't, you're going to lose. That's the greatest motivator in the world. You're going to lose. Oh, and by the way, if you personally don't do well, you might lose your job. How about, you know, responsibility? I mean, you need to get up to play a game? Really? If you need to do that, you know, I've really got to get myself. You need to do that? You shouldn't be playing. You get 12 chances a year. As far as I'm concerned, you got to be ready all 12 times. You hate this attitude, don't you? It's too practical for you. It takes away the glory of like game week.
This is the reason why you're Mr. 45 heart rate.
But
quoting the hammer, may I add?
Yeah, it is his quote, as a matter of fact. But I've always been a believer in talent and execution, and you need to have both. Hey, you need to have talent and execution. You just can't have one or the other. If you're not talented, you execute well, the other guy's talent's still going to get you. If you have talent with no execution, you're not going to have it. It's not going to happen. Now, part of that is paying attention to detail in practice. But you need both talent and execution to do it. I don't care if he said that. That's fine. He's got confidence in his own team. It's fine. He's confident in his teammates. Great. Fine by me. Now you got to go up and back it up. That's the part that scares you. You are afraid they can't back it up.
That is the Eagle fan in me. But every Eagle fan has this in them. It's just the way we're built because of many years of disappointment. I'll fully admit that.
Well, I mean, I'm just, you know. When have the Eagles had better talent than the other team? A lot of times, not too often. They've had years where they've had really good talent. But usually when they've faced somebody else, like in a big game or whatever, the other team had better talent and they executed better. I mean, that's always been that 9 times out of 10, those are the issues. talent and execution. And you have to have good coaching. I mean, you can't just roll the ball out. And you have to understand when you really need to coach, when you really need to teach, and then sometimes when you need to back off and say, you know what, I like what I'm seeing. And that's where you have to have a feel for it. I mean, there, you know, it's interesting. Today, everybody uses a clock in practice. Now, and that's a... That's a mixed bag. Most times, the period will end a little early. Every once in a while, it'll go a little longer. It depends, but they're pretty close on the clock. Joe never used a clock. Joe kind of looked out and he'd say, okay. You know, kind of kept it in his own head. And every once in a while, he'd look at somebody and go, yep, you've done enough. Looks good. And every once in a while, he'd say, look, we got to, you know, I remember one day he was so mad about Penn State's screen pass game. I mean, that went on forever. Then one day, in order to determine who should be the starting running back between Tony Hunt and Austin Scott, all he did was do a third down and one, third down and two scrimmage. That's all he did. Third and one, third and two. And maybe mixed in third and three once in a while. But third and one, third and two. And that was the whole scrimmage. And Tony Hunt won the job. It was down on the what's now the lacrosse field. It was grass back then. Down that lower area. And James will do that. James will look out, and you know they'll go through a series of stuff on offense. For example, they'll be like, I don't know, a minute and a half, minute 45 left on the clock. He said, that we're done. You have to have a good feel for that. And then you look at it and go, and you'll take it right to the wire because it hasn't been a great period. Talent, execution. Okay. Your guy, Aaron Judge. What makes Aaron Judge a great player? Aaron Judge takes care of all the small stuff. He is an outstanding fielder because he knows he has to play in the field. That's a big man to be playing center field. Right. Yet, he has excellent instincts, fabulous arm, knows which base he needs to go to, always seems to have control of the game one way or the other defensively. Then offensively, for a big man who has a huge strike zone, has a great feel for the strike zone and executes. Talent, he has that. Execution, he has that. Now do you understand where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah, I always have.
Yeah. Lack of talent. All right, so now we're back to Friday Night Play-by-Play. No, we just skip.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit-a!
News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. Matt's going to be pacing all night because Miles Sanders made a statement about All-Stars.
It's just unnecessary, that's all.
You just got to roll with the punches. Just roll with it. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Hey, man. A lot of words spoken during the course of the offseason in the week of games. It's like, it's gotten to the point I don't listen to any of it. I don't sit there and listen to it. You think I sit there and hear what Ryan Day had to say? I don't care what Ryan Day has to say. Kick the thing off. Let's go. I care about what plays he calls.
One of my favorite things you said last year, the day of the week leading up to the Auburn game, the whiteout, the Friday before, everyone's asking you, what are you doing before the game, during the game leading up to the, what are you doing, you know, leading up to kickoff at night? you're like, oh, no, I'm going to chop some wood and cut my grass and go call a game. I just thought that was just signature you.
Well, what am I supposed to do? What do you want me to do?
That.
Pay? What do you want me to do? Pace back and forth? What the heck?
Oh, that was one of the best moments from the football season last year.
I had to stack firewood because I got a cord of wood and I cut my lawn. Why? I didn't have to be in the stadium, but what was this game? A 7:30 game last year?
Yeah, it was a Saturday night football game.
So we're on at 6 o'clock. I don't have to be there till 5. So what do you want me to do? Okay. All right, I got a Finley's number 1. Bagley's 4. Hunter's 27. Shanker, the tight end, 47.
I think this is more or less, you know, are you watching game day? Are you watching film? I don't know, something like that. I think that's what people were trying to ask you.
I'm not watching film. I watch film during the week.
Yeah, you did that during the week, right.
During the week, I watch film. I mean, you know, once you get to Thursday, if you are not ready by Thursday, you should not be calling the game. And you shouldn't be playing the game. And you shouldn't be coaching the game if you're not ready by Thursday. You shouldn't be calling the game if you aren't ready by Thursday. You know what the two easiest days of the week happen to be?
Friday and Saturday.
Yes, Friday and Saturday are my two easiest days of the week by a wide margin. And that's the way it's always been. Hey, you want to know why I can feel that way? Because I already know I'm ready. Plus, I thought the grass was getting long. I don't know.